will not be leaving us, so long as you wish her to stay." Munch looked at me and grinned ear to ear. I was Christmas morning. Lucky me. The interior of the house wasn't much better than the exterior. The smell of fresh paint mingled with the smell of new carpet. The furniture was tasteful but bland. Marriott meets college dorm. There was a living room with a couch, two club chairs, a coffee table, and a television. Two small bedrooms with queen-sized beds, a bath and a half. An eat-in kitchen that opened to a family room that ordinarily would have a television and a comfortable couch, but in this house was set up as an office and lab. This was Munch's house, I thought, hastily finished when the ranch-style house burned down. Munch, the English-speaking uniform, and three other uniforms with guns drawn led me to the kitchen. A uniform pulled a wooden kitchen chair to the middle of the room, sat me down, and secured my hands behind the chair back with cuffs. He cuffed my right ankle to a chair leg, my left ankle to another chair leg, and he took a step back and set the key on the kitchen counter.
"Is that okay?" he said to Munch.
"Yeah," Munch said. "That's great, except she's got all her clothes on." The uniform opened a couple kitchen drawers, found a pair of scissors, and handed them to Munch.
"Have fun,"
the uniform said. The four henchmen left, locking the front door on their way out. There was the sound of two vehicles moving on the gravel surface, and then it was quiet. Just Munch and me left in the cement block house. "So," I said to Munch, "see any good Star Trek reruns lately?"
"Yeah, all the time. I have the whole collection. All the seasons, and all the movies."
"Wow, that's amazing. Do you want to watch some?"
"Maybe later. I only have an hour to have fun with you."
"What does fun involve?"
"You know, fun."
"It looks like you work here. That's a serious-looking computer."
"It's okay. Mostly I work at the main facility."
"Where is that located? Is it far away?"
"It's through the woods. Everything is through the woods here."
"Wolf said you were sending a rocket up tonight. That's pretty exciting. I wish I could see it."
"It's not that exciting. It's just a small X-12 King. When we get the barium, we'll fly the big bird, the Blueback. It holds 2,300 pounds of propellant, and it's got a full payload. It'll be the first real test. If it works, we'll go global."
"Global? What does that mean?"
"It means we'll be able to control weather. Well, not entirely. I can't do everything with the waves, at least not yet."
"What can you do?"
"I can make lightning, not just a single strike either. I can create the most terrifying storm you've ever imagined, and I can make it rain. Not a sustained rain, but a deluge. I can make the kind of rain that can do damage. Rain the Earth can't absorb fast enough."
"Why would you want to do this?"
"I don't know. Why do people want to paint pictures? Why do people want to design skyscrapers? It's just what you do. It's what's in your head. I tried to get Brightland to fund my research, but they thought I was a nut. All they wanted was a better magnetometer."
"What about Eugene Scanlon?"
"Eugene was okay. He saw what I was doing with the new antennae grid design and the miniaturization. He's the one who started all this in the Barrens. He had some land here, and since the Barrens are filled with nutcases, he figured we wouldn't be bothered by anyone. The problem was, we didn't have any money. All I could do was computer-generated stuff. We did a couple tests with the little rockets, but then we were broke."
"That's where Wolf comes in, right?"
"Yeah, he's got money coming out of his ears. I don't know where he gets it. It's like he makes it in the basement or something."
"Why did he kill Eugene Scanlon?"
"Eugene wanted Wolf's money, but he didn't want Wolf involved. Eugene wanted to be the boss. And then Eugene got all in a snit and said he wanted Wolf to buy him out. Eugene wanted $50 million or he was going public with my research. So Wolf killed him. Wolf doesn't mess around. He's got four Bluebacks on pads for me. You know what they cost? About $2 million apiece. Not that it's a big loss. He'll get all that money back and more. Once I'm up to speed, I'll be able to destroy every power grid in the country. They'll pay us whatever we want."
"You'd blackmail cities?"
"Yeah, how awesome is that?"
"If Wolf has so much money, why did you steal the transmitter?"
"It was going to take too long to order one. We have a generator that we're using now, but it doesn't give enough power. The radio station had a monster."
"Where's Gail Scanlon?"
"She's at the main facility. She's part of a side experiment I started. Turns out, the human brain operates on low frequencies of electromagnetic energy. When you're in active thought, it's maybe at like 14 cycles per second. When you're sleeping, it's more like 4 cycles. I can alter that with my machine. Only problem is, I needed to put the helmet on my test subject so their brain waves would match the resonant frequencies I chose to generate. I can't really control thoughts yet, but I can make monkeys fall asleep or get depressed or enraged. Human trials are my next phase.
Seemed to me that monkeys spent a lot of time sleeping anyway. And as for depressed and rage, I'd feel that way too if I was forced to wear a helmet while Munch conducted experiments on me. Chapter 22. Munch picked the scissors up from the table.
I should start working on your clothes before my time is up.
These are the only clothes I have with me, I said. If you cut them up, I won't have anything.
Yeah, but you won't need anything. I figure you'll just go naked all the time.
That feels sort of icky.
You'll get used to it. You'll be like my sex slave. Besides, once I perfect my mind control device, I'll be able to control your mood, if you know what I mean.
Wouldn't you rather have a girlfriend?
Are you kidding?
Munch said, looking for a place to start with the scissors.
What man wouldn't rather have a sex slave?
Lots of men.
They're lying. Sex slave is the way to go. You could do anything you want to a sex slave.
I was wearing jeans and Diesel's sweatshirt. The sweatshirt was thick and didn't have a front zipper. Munch started cutting at the bottom on the sweatshirt.
Ow!
I said.
What?
You stuck me.
I did not. Stop squirming.
What do you mean you can do anything you want to a sex slave? You aren't weird, are you?
I don't know. I want to try stuff.
What kind of stuff?
I really didn't want to hear any of this, but he only had 20 minutes left. If I kept him talking, I could considerably delay the whole naked thing.
Everything.
I don't do everything, I said.
A sex slave does everything.
Not this one.
Jeez, Munch said. Give me a break. I went to a lot of trouble to get you here. The least you could do is cooperate.
I could cooperate better if you untied me.
I don't trust you. Last time you kicked me in the nuts.
I wouldn't do that this time.
Wolf would be mad at me. He told me not to untie you.
How are you going to do everything if I'm tied to this chair? A lot of my best parts are inaccessible.
Wolf already thought of that. He said I should have fun with you like this, and then when I want to do something different, like some of the everything stuff, I should get the two men outside to help me.
I felt all the blood drain from my head, and I broke out in a cold sweat. That would be rape, I said.
You could think of it like it's a science experiment, Munch said. And like those two guys are lab techs.
If you cut the restraints around my ankles, you could pull my pants off, I said to him. It would be okay because my hands would still be tied behind my back on this chair. Munch thought about it.
I'd like to pull your pants off, he said. It's going to be hard to cut through the denim with these scissors.
I'm wearing a thong, I told him.
Okay, he said. But you have to promise not to kick me.
I promise. Munch cut the two plastic bands around my ankles and the shackles dropped away. He reached for the snap on my jeans, and I kicked him in the nuts. He went to his knees, his eyes bulged out of his head, and he crashed onto his face. If you so much as squeak, I'll kick you again, I said. I stood and worked my arms up the chair back. Once I was free of the chair, I took the key off the counter and unlocked the cuffs. Munch was curled into a fetal position, the sweat soaking through his Star Trek shirt, his breathing labored. I needed a place to stash him. The bathroom was no good. I couldn't lock the door from the outside. Broom closet? Wouldn't fit. Coat closet? No lock. Cellar door? Yes. The cellar would be perfect. I grabbed the back of his shirt and dragged him moaning to the cellar door and shoved him down the stairs. Bump, 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 bump. I locked the cellar door and crept around the house looking out windows. The two uniforms were in front of the house, laughing and talking, sitting on leftover cement blocks. I tiptoed out the back door off the kitchen and quietly disappeared into the woods. My heart was pounding so loud I was afraid the guards might hear it in the front of the house. I had no idea where I was going. The pine barrens were huge, and if I walked in the wrong direction, I could walk for days and never see a road or a human being or a hut. Problem was, I didn't know the right direction from the wrong direction. I would walk a little and then stop and listen. Sooner or later, Wolf would discover Munch in the cellar, and he'd set out to find me. I walked for an hour and came to an ATV path that turned into a dirt road. I followed the dirt road, and in 20 minutes I was on a 2-lane paved road. I looked at my cell phone, still no reception. It was 5:30 p.m. and twilight. I saw a pickup truck in the distance heading in my direction. I could hear the broken muffler a mile away. The truck was a wreck, not something I could see Wolf owning. I stepped into the road and flagged the truck down. I need a ride, I told the driver. My car broke down on the dirt road. I need to make a phone call.
There's a gas station and convenience store at the crossroads, he said. I could take you there. There's a phone inside the convenience store you could use.
I climbed into the truck. That would be great. I really appreciate it. I'm Stephanie.
Elmer.
He was in his late 60s. His hair was gray and thinning on top. He was wearing a plaid shirt, a navy quilted vest, and khakis. There was a thick layer of dust inside and outside the truck. The floor was littered with fast food wrappers, and the upholstery reeked of smoke. Not that I was going to judge. I was happy to have a ride. What road are we on? I asked him.
This is Bangor Road. The gas station's at the corner of Bangor and Marbury. I guess you're not from around here.
I'm from Trenton. I was visiting a friend, and I got lost.
Easy to get lost here. The gas station is just up ahead.
He reached the corner of Bangor and Marbury, and the gas station and convenience store were closed.
This here's run by Booger Jackson. I guess Booger had something better to do than keep things open tonight, he said. That's the way it is in this neck of the woods.
I looked at my phone. Still no reception. I'll give you $50 if you'll drive me to Trenton, I said.
$50? That's a lot of money.
I wasn't convinced his truck could make it all the way to Trenton, but I'd go as far as he could take me. If I had to flag down another driver in Cherry Hill, it was better than staying here.
Okay, he said. I guess you must be in a bind to get home.
He took Route 206, and I didn't object. I didn't think the truck was turnpike material. 20 minutes later, I had cell service, and I called Diesel. I'm on my way home, I told him.
Are you okay?
Yes, I'm surprised you're not combing the woods looking for me.
I was in the air with Boone all afternoon. He just brought me back to Trenton. Ranger has 20 men on the ground. You need to call him.
I have a favor to ask. I have no clean clothes. Could you take the laundry basket to my mother's house and ask her to throw everything in the washer?
I'm on it.
I dialed Ranger. I'm okay, I said.
Where are you?
I'm on my way home. Lula was next on my list, and then my mother. I'm sending Diesel over with laundry, I told my mother. I'd really appreciate it if you'd throw it all in the washer.
Where are you? I tried to call. I made lasagna. It's still warm.
Give some to Diesel when he gets there, and I'll be there in about a half hour.
Was that your mom? Elmer asked.
Yes, she's going to hold dinner for me. You can take me to her house in Chambersburg.
I haven't been to Trenton in about 20 years. You'll have to give me directions.
It was dark when Elmer finally chugged to the curb and parked behind the Subaru at my parents' house. I wrenched my door open and jumped from the pickup. I'll be right back with your money, I said.
I'll be here.
A black Porsche Turbo slid to a stop behind the truck, and Ranger got out. He closed the distance between us, pulled me to him, and held me tight.
Are you really okay? He asked.
Yeah, it was scary, but I got away before anything bad happened. His voice softened and dropped to a whisper against my ear.
I had to see for myself.
I allowed myself a moment to relax into Ranger. He was warm and strong, and all the bad, frightening things in life went away when he held me like this. How did you know I was here?
I have the Subaru tagged.
I could feel Ranger smile. He saw the humor in his obsession to keep me on his radar screen. Does Diesel know?
Hard to tell what Diesel knows.
Ranger pulled back a little and looked at me.
Diesel has super bad enemies, and the people he chases aren't normal. You need to be careful if you partner with Diesel.
He popped into my apartment, and I can't get rid of him.
You could move into Rangeman until he leaves.
That's going from the frying pan into the fire. The smile was back.
In some ways.
Anyway, he feels like a brother.
I'm sure he would love that description, Ranger said.
Grandma Mazur opened the front door and looked out.
Stephanie, is that Ranger with you? Is that your truck?
I have to go,
Ranger said.
Try to stay out of trouble.
He kissed me on the forehead, jogged back to his car, and took off. Grandma came to see what was going on with the truck.
Who's this? She said, looking inside at Elmer.
This is Elmer, I said. He was nice enough to bring me home when I got stranded in the Barrens.
He's a cutie, Grandma said. He don't look too old, either.
I got most of my original teeth, Elmer said.
We got a lot of lasagna, Grandma said to him. We kept it warm for Stephanie. You're welcome to come have some lasagna with us.
That would be real nice, Elmer said. I'm starving.
I looked back at the house and saw Diesel standing in the doorway waiting for me.
I had to buy more Pepto-Bismol, he said when I reached him. You're giving me an ulcer.
I have a lot to tell you.
What's with the sweatshirt? It looks like someone took a scissor to the bottom of it.
Munch was trying to get it off me, but it didn't work out. Diesel grinned.
You kicked him in the nuts again, didn't you?
It's my signature move. He looked beyond me.
Who's the guy with Grandma?
Elmer. I flagged him down after I escaped, and I bribed him to drive me home.
Elmer? And he's from the Barrens?
Yeah.
Honey, you didn't bring Elmer the firefighter home with you, did you?
I glanced back at Elmer. He didn't say he was the firefighter. Diesel hooked an arm around my neck and hugged me to him.
This is why I love you.
Everyone sit down, my mother said, setting the tray of lasagna in the middle of the dining room table. Frank, she yelled to my father, come to the table.
I already ate,
my father said.
You can eat again. Stephanie is here with guests.
My father heaved himself out of his chair.
The big one isn't a guest. I don't know what he is.
He's like a member of the family, Grandma said.
My father looked down the table at Diesel.
Heaven help us, he said.
Grandma poured Elmer a glass of wine and gave him a slab of lasagna.
We got red sauce for the lasagna, too, she said, passing the gravy boat to Elmer.
This looks good, Elmer said, digging in. I can't remember the last time I had a meal like this.
Diesel ate some lasagna and leaned close to me.
This is filled with cheese and hot sausage. I hope Elmer isn't lactose intolerant. He'll burn his truck down on the way home.
At the other end of the table, Elmer was shoveling the food in. He doesn't look lactose intolerant, I said. He's putting extra grated cheese on his lasagna. My father was swiveled around in his seat, trying to see the television. He was missing a Seinfeld rerun.
It was real nice of you to bring Stephanie home, Grandma said to Elmer. Do you live in the Pine Barrens?
Yep, Elmer said. It's the best place on Earth. It's filled with interesting people, and you don't hardly ever see any of them.
I go to Atlantic City once in a while, Grandma said, but the bus don't stop in the Pine Barrens.
Too bad, Elmer said. We got some good things there, antique stores and such.
Grandma gave him a second portion of lasagna.
Do you have a job?
No, I'm retired. It's hard for me to keep a job on account of I have an affliction.
What kind of affliction? Grandma wanted to know.
I can't talk about it, Elmer said. It's unmentionable.
Diesel and I exchanged looks.
Oh, boy, I said.
Are we done yet?
My father asked.
We haven't even had dessert, Grandma said. Hold your shirt on.
Elmer scraped his chair back.
I might have to use your restroom.
It's at the top of the stairs, Grandma told him. I'll get the coffee started.
Elmer climbed the stairs, and moments later,
ba-room!
What was that?
My mother asked.
It sounded like an explosion.
Diesel pressed his lips together, and his face turned red. I appreciate the effort you're making not to laugh, I said to him, but you're going to burst all the blood vessels in your head if you keep holding it in.
I can't believe you brought the firefighter home, he said. Couldn't you have gotten a ride from the Easter Bunny or Sasquatch?
You should have been taking better care of me. It's all your fault. I got kidnapped by your cousin. I'm lucky Martin Munch doesn't have me pinned to a board like a frog in biology class.
You're right, Diesel said. I should have done a better job of protecting you. But, that said, I would have thought twice about getting in a truck with a firefighter.
I wasn't thinking. I forgot about the firefighter. I was stressed. Elmer came back to the table, and Grandma trotted in with coffee and half an apple pie. She served the coffee and pie, and Elmer reached for the cream and farted.
Brumph!
Flames shot out of Elmer's ass, set his pants on fire, and ignited the upholstered seat on the cherrywood side chair. Elmer jumped up and dropped his pants, drawers and all.
Holy crap, my father said. That smells like the slaughterhouse burned down.
My mother downed a glass of wine and poured herself another, and my grandmother leaned forward to get a better view.
Don't get to see this every day, Grandma said.
Diesel dumped a pitcher of water on the chair and stomped on Elmer's pants.
Excuse me, Elmer said. The sausage was spicy.
That was a pip of a fart, Grandma said. I've seen people fart fire on YouTube, but I never saw anyone do it that good.
We got Elmer outfitted in one of my father's old work pants. Diesel gave him $50, and we sent him back to the Barrens.
Got my money's worth out of that $50, Diesel said, loading the laundry basket into the back of the Subaru. I got to see a guy fart fire.
I cut my eyes to him. You were impressed with that?
Hell yeah. I can't do it, at least not without a Zippo lighter.
Maybe Elmer had a Zippo lighter.
I don't care how he did it. It was an excellent fart.
We got in the car, and Morelli called just before we reached my building.
I had the strangest feeling all day, he said. Like something awful was happening. Are you okay?
Yes. How about you?
I'm better than okay. Anthony gets his stitches out tomorrow, and then he's going home. His wife has taken him back. I'm not sure why.
She loves him.
Yeah, well, I love him too, but I don't want to live with him. Although, I have to say, we had fun yesterday. We watched the game, and it was almost like he was human. What did you do?
Blew up a fuel depot, stole 12 rockets and made off with them in a stolen van, got kidnapped by a maniac, and had dinner with a guy who farted fire.
That would be funny, but I'm worried it's all true.
It's been a long couple days.
Did he really fart fire? Morelli asked.
Yeah, set his pants on fire and burned my mother's dining room chair to a crisp.
Wish I'd seen it, Morelli said.
Men are weird.
Cupcake, we'd all like to be able to fart fire.
Gotta go.
Love you, Morelli said.
Me too, I said, and I hung up. Carl was in the kitchen feeding cereal to Rex when we got home. Carl would drop in a Fruit Loop. Rex would rush out of his can, stuff the Fruit Loop into his cheek, and rush back to his can. Carl would repeat the drill.
Cute, I said. Carl has a pet.
Either that or he's fattening him up for the kill.
Do monkeys eat hamsters? Diesel shrugged.
They eat pizza with pepperoni.
Mental note. First thing tomorrow, take Rex to stay at parents' house for duration of monkey visit. I told Diesel about the cement block house in the woods, and I repeated my conversation with Munch.
There's no point looking for the house, Diesel said. Wolf will move Munch, and we've caused him sufficient aggravation that he's probably in the process of moving the whole operation out of the Barrens.
He can't do that overnight. Munch said he had 4 blueback rockets sitting on pads.
A rocket that size can be trucked out fairly easily. Most of its weight is in fuel. I just don't know why we aren't seeing it. I suppose he could camouflage a single rocket if he put it in a stand of pines, and he might even be able to hide an antenna array. What we should be seeing from the air is Command Central. He needs a place to house his men, track his rocket, plan his transmitter. And he'd need a generator. Why aren't we seeing all that?
Maybe you're looking in the wrong part of the Barrens?
No, everything he does is in the same area. I know Bangor Road and Marbury Road.
Apparently they have everything in place to send up the sounding rocket except for the barium. They're waiting on the barium.
I talked to Cuddles. He said it would be in late tomorrow.
Chapter 23. I opened my eyes and looked at my alarm clock. It was 7 a.m., and the phone was ringing. Diesel reached across me and answered it.
It's for you, he said, handing me the phone. It's the Batcave.
This is Gene in the Rangeman control room, a guy said. I'm gonna patch you through to Hal.
A moment later, Hal came on.
I hope I'm not calling too early, he said. But a new monkey just showed up, and he's wearing a scarf.
What kind of scarf?
It's a scrap of material tied around his neck. Like decoration, like you see on a dog sometimes. It's made out of hippie material.
Tie-dye?
Yeah, real bright colors, like what you see in the house here.
Hang on to him. I'm on my way.
I returned the phone to the nightstand. Hal said a monkey just showed up. Diesel was already out of bed, getting dressed.
I heard.
How could you hear?
I have good ears.
I was talking to him on the phone.
I can't find my shoes, Diesel said.
I took clean jeans and underwear from the laundry basket and headed for the bathroom. Under the coffee table, just like always.
We've been living together too long, Diesel said. I'm not the man of mystery anymore. Your mother washes my underwear, and you always know where my shoes are.
You've never been the man of mystery. Ranger's the man of mystery.
Then who am I?
You're Diesel. And just being Diesel was more than enough. Diesel and I had breakfast sandwiches and coffee to go. Carl was in the back seat of the Subaru with a breakfast sandwich and a bottle of water. Our hope was that Gail had managed to tie a scrap of her skirt around the monkey's neck and set him free, and that somehow we could get the monkey to lead us back to Gail. We'd brought Carl along as translator.
This is going to be embarrassing, Diesel said.
What?
Talking to a monkey in front of Rangers, man.
How about if I tell Hal we need to talk to the monkey in private?
I know Carl seems rotten enough to be human sometimes, but I'm not completely convinced he understands anything we say.
He can play Super Mario, I said to Diesel.
Yeah, but he can't win. Mario keeps dying.
Carl tapped Diesel on the shoulder. Diesel looked at Carl in the rearview mirror, and Carl gave Diesel the finger.
I'm just saying, Diesel said to Carl.
An hour later, we were on the dirt road that led to Gail Scanlon's compound. It was early morning, and the barrens felt benign. The sun was shining. It was in the mid-70s. And there was no sign of the Easter Bunny, the firefighter, Sasquatch, or the Jersey Devil. Diesel drove into the clearing and parked close to the house, next to a black Rangeman SUV. Hal came out of the house and met us in the yard.
I've got the new monkey in the cage, he said. It's still got the scarf around its neck.
We all walked to the cage and peered inside. The scarf looks like Gail's skirt, I said. I saw the monkeys before Carl set them loose, and I can't remember any of them having a neck scarf.
He doesn't look very smart, Diesel said. He's not even giving me the finger.
Can monkeys do that?
Hal asked. Carl gave him the finger.
Cool, Hal said.
So what do you think? I said to Carl. Can you get the monkey to take us to Gail? Carl looked at me and shrugged. Hal opened the door to the enclosure, and Carl went in and sidled up to the monkey with the scarf. Carl picked something off the monkey's head and ate it. Diesel gave a snort of laughter. It's a social ritual, I said. And you have no room to laugh. You were gobstruck by a guy who farted fire.
No way, Hal said.
Swear to God, Diesel told him. Fire came out of this guy's ass like a blowtorch. I saw him burn down a chair.
Jeez, Hal said. I'd give anything to see that.
Stop the planet, I said. I want to get off. Carl did some chee-chee-chee and some woo-woo-woo with the scarf monkey, and they scampered out the door and ran away into the pine forest.
Boy, he sure took off, Hal said.
I nudged Diesel. Okay, big boy, let's see what you're made of. Smell him out. Diesel grabbed my hand and pulled me into the woods.
I suspect that was sarcasm, but as it happens, I have a highly developed sense of smell.
Like a bloodhound?
Yeah, or a werewolf.
Are you a werewolf?
No, I have it on good authority. Werewolves aren't real.
What about the Easter Bunny?
His name is Bernard Zumwalt, and he's originally from Chicago.
Santa Claus? Sasquatch?
They're real. Sasquatch comes from a big family. They're all over the place. Santa Claus is getting on in years. I don't know how much longer he can keep it going.
I'm not taking the hook, I said to Diesel.
You were thinking about it.
True. It was hard not to believe Diesel. He looked trustworthy, and normal had a tendency to expand in his universe. Are you sure we're following the monkeys? I asked him after a half hour of walking on pine needles and struggling through underbrush.
I'm sure we're following them. I'm not sure they're taking us to Gail.
We were on an ATV path, and the next moment we stumbled into the Easter Bunny's yard. He was back in his chair, wearing the same sad rabbit suit, and he was still smoking.
Hey, Bernie, Diesel said. How's it going?
It's not Bernie, he said. It's E. Bunny.
He took a long drag, pitched his stub of a cigarette onto the ground, and lit another.
Oh, hell, who am I kidding? It's Bernie. The bastard's retired me, suit and all.
You don't have to work anymore, Diesel said.
This is the good life.
Bernie nodded.
It ain't bad. I get to sit here and smoke all day. Toward the end, they came in with all that no-smoking crapola. That was a bitch. You know what it's like trying to sneak a smoke in a rabbit suit? It's a shits.
Did you see a couple monkeys go past?
Yeah, one of them was wearing a scarf.
After an hour, I was thinking everything looked familiar. Have we been here before? I asked Diesel.
Yeah, the stupid monkeys are leading us in a circle. Bernie's homestead is just ahead.
How did you know his name was Bernie?
I googled Easter Bunny.
And it told you the Easter Bunny's name was Bernie?
Okay, so I asked around.
Who did you ask?
Flash. He has a friend at the DMV, and he looked up the rabbit's license plate.
Diesel draped an arm across my shoulders.
Do you believe me?
No. Diesel grinned.
People believe what they want to believe.
We ambled back into Bernie's yard and stopped to watch Bernie blow smoke rings.
Looks like you're still following the monkeys,
Bernie said, squinting through the smoke at us.
You're about 3 minutes behind them, and watch out for the Jersey Devil. He's been in a real bad mood lately.
We walked about 100 yards and ran into Carl. He was sitting back on his haunches, looking dejected. Where's the other monkey? I asked him. Carl looked up. The monkey was in a tree. What's he doing there? Carl shrugged. This was a stupid idea, I said to Diesel.
Yeah, but at least you walked off your sausage and egg sandwich. It would have gone straight to your ass.
I'm going back to Gail's house, and then I'm going home. I don't care about Munch. I don't care about Wolf. I don't care about their wicked weather machine. I don't care if it rains rhinoceroses.
What about Gail Scanlon?
She's on her own.
I looked around. Which way do I go?
Wait, Diesel said. Do you hear something rumbling?
I stopped and listened. It sounds like Elmer's truck with a broken muffler. We walked through the woods following the sound. Carl tagged along, but the scarf monkey stayed in the tree. The truck cut out, but we kept walking in the general direction. The trees thinned, and we came to a large patch of scorched earth. A small, egg-shaped Airstream travel trailer sat on the edge of the clearing. Elmer's truck was parked next to the trailer. Diesel knocked on the trailer door, and Elmer answered.
Holy cow, Elmer said. What a surprise. Nobody ever visits me. Do you want to come in?
I gnawed on my lip. I didn't want to be rude, but there was only one door. If Elmer farted and the trailer went up in flames, I'd die a horrible death. No thanks, I said. We were just out for a walk.
We're looking for Gail Scanlon, Diesel said.
That's a monkey lady, Elmer said. I met her once. She was real nice. I heard she was missing and all her monkeys got loose.
Elmer looked past me at Carl.
Is that one of her monkeys?
Carl gave Elmer the finger. Yep, I said. That's her monkey.
Do you have any neighbors? Diesel asked.
The Easter Bunny is a couple miles through the woods, and one of the Sasquatch boys lives down the road a ways. Used to be a young couple living in a little house at the end of Junior Sasquatch's road, but they moved out, and then the house burned down. I swear it wasn't my fault.
Anyone else?
Not in this little patch of the Barrens, Elmer said. There's some businesses on Marbury Road, a couple antique shops, the Flying Donkey Mine, bed and breakfast that don't serve breakfast.
Is it a real mine? I asked him.
I suppose years ago it might have been. I don't know what kind of mine, though. As long as I've been here, it was a tourist attraction. Only thing, there was hardly any tourists. It closed almost as soon as it opened, and it's been closed since. And, of course, there's the devil, except he isn't much of a neighbor.
Do you know the devil? I asked him.
Not personal. I hear him flying over the trailer at night sometimes. Lately, he's been flying a lot. I tell you, the Barrens are strange, and getting stranger.
Have you ever been in the mine? Diesel asked Elmer.
Nope. I thought about it, but it got closed before I got around to visiting. I thought it might have been interesting.
I think we should take a look at it, Diesel said.
You can't go in. It's all boarded up.
Then we'll look at it from the outside, Diesel said to Elmer.
You feel like driving us over there?
Sure, Elmer said. I'll get my keys.
I glanced over at Diesel. I thought you said it was a bad idea to get in a truck with the firefighter.
He's what we've got. If we don't go with Elmer, we walk 2 hours through the woods to Gale's house. That's 2 hours less to find Munch and Wolf.
Yeah, but what if we're in the truck and he farts?
If he farts, we'll jump out of the truck and run like hell.
Elmer came out with the keys. I got in front with Elmer. Diesel and Carl climbed into the back. Did you ever explore around in the woods? I asked Elmer.
Hardly ever. I got a creaky knee. Makes it hard to walk in the pine needles. And the truck's gotta have a road. I hear them ATVs riding around behind me going in the woods, but I haven't got one of them.
It took 20 minutes to get to the mine, and Elmer was right about it being closed. A large, weather-beaten sign advertised tours of the Flying Donkey, but the sign was more of a tombstone than anything else. The donkey's gift shop windows were covered with crudely nailed-on sheets of plywood. The plywood was warped and water-stained. The shop door was boarded shut. The parking lot was large, made to accommodate tour buses that never came. Weeds struggled to grow in the cracks in the blacktop. The mine itself was several yards behind the gift shop. A path led from the parking lot to the mine. Elmer parked close to the gift shop. We left Carl in the truck, and Diesel, Elmer, and I got out and took the path. Another sign was posted at the mine's entrance. Closed was spray-painted over the tour times. A half-assed chain-link fence was propped across an entrance that looked more like the approach to a cave than a mine. A dirt path continued past the mine entrance. A smaller, barely legible sign announced that this was a nature walk.
I'm feeling in the mood for nature, Diesel said, setting off on the path.
Elmer and I walked along with him, and it occurred to me that this was a maintained path. It should have been overgrown by now, but the brush had been weed-whacked away. Diesel stopped after a couple hundred feet, and then quietly walked several yards into the woods. We followed him and stared down at an air shaft. We returned to the trail and found 6 more air shafts at regular intervals. We stood over the last air shaft, and muffled voices carried up to us. Diesel motioned for silence, and we quietly walked back to the trail.
This is why we couldn't see it from the air, Diesel said to me. These underground caves can be huge and wind around for miles. Everyone walk in a different direction. Go 200 feet and come back. Look for any disturbance in the undergrowth.
I walked about 50 feet in and saw a wire running pine tree to pine tree, even with the top of my head. The pines were straight and tall, and most of the lower branches had been trimmed. An antenna stretched along the trunk of the pine tree, disappearing into the upper branches. There were wires crisscrossing the stand of trees, and I counted 26 antennae joined by the wires. I returned to the path and waited for Diesel. I found the grid of antennae, I said to Diesel. They're hidden by the pines.
And I found a hatch that's probably the roof over a rocket silo.
I didn't find nothing, Elmer said.
Chapter 24. We walked back to the mine entrance and pulled the gate away. A walkway led into the mine interior.
This is convenient for them, Diesel said. You can pull a truck into the lot, offload materials, and move everything along an underground path. They probably have a couple heavy-duty carts, and probably there's another entrance to this cave. Maybe several. I'm guessing if we go back to the fuel depot and the 2 houses where Munch was living, we'll find they all hook up with this cave system. And there has to be another house or business where they can park cars.
Now that we've found them, what's next? I asked. Police? Homeland Security?
That would ruin my chances at containing Wolf. I need to get into the mine and look around.
He turned to Elmer.
I want you to go to Gale's house. You know where it is, right?
Yep, I know exactly where.
There's a guy staying there. His name is Hal. He'll be dressed in black, and he works for a company called Rangeman. Tell him about the mine, and tell him Stephanie and I are inside. Ask him to tell all that to Ranger.
Okay, I got it.
Diesel took my hand and tugged me into the mine entrance. I hate this, I said to him. I'm claustrophobic, and I can't see in the dark like you can.
Walk where I walk, and you'll be fine.
Daylight faded away behind us, and smothering blackness closed in around us. The path under our feet was smooth and level. I was close to Diesel.
my hand flat against his back in an effort to absorb some courage. We walked a short distance and came to a fork. Diesel went right and stopped.
"What's wrong?"
I whispered.
"Door."
I felt Diesel put his hand to the door and push it open. Pathlights dimly illuminated the corridor in front of us. We were in a rock tube, a habitrail for spelunkers. Fuel storage tanks lined the side of the tube, and electric lines ran overhead. A narrow tunnel went off to the right, but we could hear voices ahead, and we followed the voices. We reached what appeared to be the end of the tunnel and peeked around the edge of the rock wall into a cavernous room that looked like it belonged in a low-budget James Bond film. Monitors sat on collapsible rectangular tables. Bundles of wires snaked across the floor. A couple monster computers were housed in a makeshift cubicle. I could see the openings to two more tunnels on the other side of the room. Three men in khaki uniforms were helping Munch pack boxes. Wolf was moving his operation out of the Barrens. Diesel backed us out, retreated down the corridor, and took the narrow side tunnel. We came to another large cavern where cots were stacked triple-decker and a kitchen of sorts had been built into a wall. Dormitory, I thought, but no one was in it, and the beds had been stripped of linens. The cave smelled musty, the walls were damp, and there was the constant whoosh of air getting pumped through the tunnels. The tunnel widened, and more fuel tanks were stacked against the rock. There was another door ahead on the tunnel wall, and beyond the door the tunnel narrowed and slanted downhill. Diesel listened at the door, put his hand to the lock, and pushed the door open. It was a small cell-like room with a sink and toilet at one end and a chair and cot at the other. A single overhead bulb lit the room. Gail sat on the cot, her eyes dead in her face, her shoulders slumped. She was wearing a khaki jumpsuit and sneakers. "Gail?" She looked at me and sighed, no expression. Diesel scooped her up, carried her out of the room, and closed the door. We hustled down the corridor, retracing our steps. Diesel opened the door to the tunnel entrance, and Elmer and Carl walked through and squinted down the long corridor. Carl stood back, not sure he wanted to go further.
"Look at this," he said. "Isn't this something?"
"What are you doing here?"
"I got to the end of the parking lot, and I had one of them freak accidents, and next thing my truck was on fire. So I thought I'd come see what you were doing here, but I couldn't get through the door."
I looked at Elmer's pants and realized the seat was burned out and black around the edges. Two uniformed guys stepped into the tunnel at the far end. One raised his rifle and fired.
"Oh, crap," Elmer said.
I couldn't hear over the rifle fire if he farted, but the packing boxes lining the wall went up like tinder, and flames enveloped the first of the fuel tanks.
"Yeep!"
Carl said, and he turned tail and disappeared down the tunnel toward the entrance. Diesel pushed everyone through the door, closed it, and we all ran blind in the dark until we saw the light at the end of the tunnel. Behind me I heard pow, 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 and I suspected it was the string of tanks exploding. We burst out of the tunnel and didn't stop running until we were in the middle of the parking lot. Four fireballs rose out of the pines into the sky. There were more explosions, and a wall of fire roared out of the mouth of the cave. Black smoke blanketed the forest and parking lot, blocking the sun, stinging my eyes. I heard wings flapping close overhead, but I couldn't see through the smoke. A load of road apples dropped from the sky and splattered on the blacktop, missing me by inches. The sound of flapping wings faded.
"I guess what with all the explosions, we woke the devil up," Elmer said.
There was a lot of lightning, and the sky opened up and dumped water on the forest. The rain turned to hail, and back to rain. We walked to the road past Elmer's truck carcass and looked back at the pines. There was still a lot of smoke, but not a lot of fire.
"Where's the closest ride?" Diesel said to Elmer. "There's bed and breakfast a couple miles down the road."
"Mallory Eden's place," Gail said.
It was the first she'd spoken, and we all turned to her.
"Are you okay?"
I asked her. She shook her head.
"I'm so depressed."
Tears spilled down her cheeks.
"My poor monkeys. I couldn't tell you about Martin Munch and his partner. They had my monkeys."
"Your monkeys are okay," I said. "We took their helmets off. Most of them, anyway."
"I want to go home," Gail said. I want to see my monkeys. She looked down at Carl. Who's this little guy? This is Carl, I said. He's sort of mine. We walked down the road in the rain. I expected to hear sirens and see fire trucks barreling down on us, but the road was deserted. I was scared, Gail said. I thought they were going to kill me. Sorry it took us so long to find you. We didn't know where to begin looking. I should have realized they'd eventually take me to the mine, Gail said. The mine was Eugene's big dream project. He was going to make his fortune with it, but it turned out to be a bust. We couldn't find any record of Eugene owning property in South Jersey. It wouldn't be under his name. He had a partner, and they bought it under a holding company. They had a fight over how the business should be run, and the partner disappeared and was never seen again. I try not to think about that too much. Eugene didn't have a will that we know of, so I suppose I own his share of the mine with my sister now. It had stopped raining by the time we reached the bed and breakfast. Gail knocked on the door and explained that we needed a ride to her house. Moments later, a van pulled out of the garage, and we all piled in. Gail was the first out when we stopped in her yard. She ran to the monkey cage and counted them. They escaped, I told Gail, but they almost all came back. Hal ambled over to us.
The monkey with the scarf came back, he said to me. I put it in the cage.
Did you send the monkey with the scarf to get help? I asked Gail. No, she said. She just likes to wear a scarf. She's always worn it. You probably just didn't notice. Diesel gave me a poke in the side, and I poked him back.
I told you it was stupid, he said.
I'm sure the other three will return, I said to Gail.
The truth is, they've escaped before, and they always come back. They're really clever when it comes to locks and doors.
Hal looked relieved to see Gail Scanlon. His term as monkey man was almost up. Diesel, Carl, and I got into the Subaru and headed for the expressway. I'm wet again, I said to Diesel. I feel like I'm always wet.
I have to say, I'm going to miss sleeping on top of you, but I won't miss the Barrens.
So you're leaving?
I always leave.
Do you mind always leaving?
Sometimes, but it's what I do. I'm the job.
You'll drive me home first, won't you? You won't just pop out in the middle of the turnpike.
I still have a loose end. Wolf made a deal to get barium, and the barium is supposed to come in tonight.
Do you think he'll still want the barium now that we've torched his project?
Dunno. Probably Wolf will move on to something new. He gets bored. Even as a kid, he was always restless. Still, I have to see it through.
I called Morelli when I finally got cell service. I have a sort of disaster to report.
I hate when a conversation starts like this.
It's not a big thing. It's that this mine blew up in the Barrens, and I thought someone should look into it, but I don't know any of the local cops.
I'm assuming it's best if I don't involve you?
Yeah, you could say it was an anonymous phone call. The thing is, there might have been people in the mine.
Oh, shit.
I'm pretty sure they were bad people.
That makes all the difference,
Morelli said. Listen, it was an accident. I think Elmer might have farted, and next thing some boxes were on fire, and then it was one of those chain reaction things.
But you're okay.
Yes, and Diesel and Carl are okay, too, and we rescued Gail Scanlon.
Anthony is gone, and I'm going to be lonely tonight.
I'll keep that in mind and get back to you. Diesel was smiling when I hung up. What? I said.
You're going to get some.
And?
It'd be better if it was me.
You're leaving.
I could squeeze you in, Diesel said.
I burst out laughing. What's so awful about that? Is you're serious? Diesel was laughing, too.
I know. I want you bad.
We were about to get on the expressway. We stopped for a light. I looked left and realized Martin Munch was alongside us at the wheel of a scorched and dented black SUV. There were four other guys in the car with him. They were wearing the khaki uniforms, and they were soot-smudged and their hair looked singed. That's him, I said. It's Munch!
Hang tight, Diesel said.
The light changed. Diesel got on the gas and rammed Munch, knocking him off the road onto the shoulder, pinning the black SUV against the guardrail. Munch looked over at Diesel and me and raced the engine. He threw the SUV into reverse, but the car couldn't move. Diesel's door was smashed against the passenger side door of the SUV. I was out of the Subaru, rounding the nose of the SUV, when Munch abandoned ship. He hit the ground running and didn't look back. I ran him down, tackled him, and punched him in the face. Diesel grabbed Munch by the back of his shirt and dragged him to his feet.
I could have outrun you, Diesel said to me, but I didn't want to ruin your fun. I figured your day wasn't complete if you didn't shove some poor slob's nuts halfway up his throat. As it was, you broke his nose instead. I'm pretty damn impressed.
You guys are in big trouble now, Munch said. Wolf is going to be really bad. I would be surprised if he doesn't give you that dragon's claw thing.
Where were you going? Diesel asked Munch.
We weren't sure. We were just going anywhere. We wanted to make sure we didn't get the dragon's claw.
I looked back at the black SUV. It was empty. What happened to the other guys?
Took off like roaches when the light goes on, Diesel said.
Chapter 25. Vinny was saved, I thought. I'd captured his big-ticket bond. My only outstanding was Gordo Bolo, and I'd go back to the produce warehouse wearing a raincoat tomorrow. I had Munch's body receipt in my bag, my monkey hanging onto my leg, and in 3 minutes I'd be in my apartment and headed for a nice hot shower.
I could make that shower a lot more fun, Diesel said, opening the door to my apartment.
Stop reading my mind. He reached around me, flipped the light on, and we stared into the black eyes and eerie pale face of Gerwolf Grimoire. There was a moment where anger flashed white-hot fire in Wolf's eyes, and then it was gone, the transformation so fast and so complete, I wasn't sure I'd actually seen the flare of emotion.
Hello, cousin,
Wolf said, his voice perfectly composed.
Miss Plum? This is risky, Diesel said to Wolf. If I lay my hand on you, you're mine. Ah, but you won't. I've acquired a new skill, as I'm sure you've noticed. Why are you here? I thought I'd spare you the task of dealing with Solomon Cuddles. I no longer need the barium, and I hated to leave without saying goodbye. Having you following me to the ends of the earth is the only real amusement in my life. Jeez, Diesel said, that's pathetic. Perhaps, but the stakes in this game are high enough to keep it interesting. It's not a game, Diesel said. It is to me, Wolf said. Isn't it ironic that I was always the serious child, and now you're burdened with your unpleasant job while I'm free to play? What's next? Diesel asked him. I have a date with a witch, Wolf said. See you in Salem, cousin.
Wolf did his fire and smoke thing, and when the smoke cleared, he was gone.
Damn, Diesel said. I wish I knew how he did that.
I fanned the smoke away. My cousin Jessica lives in Salem. Actually, she's next door in Marblehead. I haven't seen her in a couple years, not since she moved from Trenton. There was a knock at my door, and for a moment I thought it might be Wolf returning. Diesel opened the door, and Susan Stitch stood there.
I've come back for my baby, Susan said. I knew I could count on you to take good care of him. I hope he was a good boy.
Yeah, he was an angel, I said. No problemo. Carl jumped at Susan and wrapped his arms around her neck.
Kiss, kiss, Susan said. Mommy loves Carl.
Diesel took Carl's leash off the kitchen counter and gave it to Susan.
Oh, yum, Susan said, eyeballing Diesel. Are there any more of you on the shelf?
How was your honeymoon? I asked Susan.
Excellent, she said. Really excellent.
I closed the door on Susan and rolled my eyes at Diesel.
Yum?
Hey, I'm yum. Deal with it.
I bent to unlace my wet sneakers.
Can a monkey be, you know, special?
Unmentionable?
Yeah.
Good question, Diesel said.
I felt his hand on my ass, and I stood and turned to face him, but he was gone.
We hope you've enjoyed Plum Spooky, a Macmillan audiobook from St. Martin's Press. This program was produced by Laura Wilson. Text copyright 2009 by Ivanovich Incorporated. Production copyright 2009 by Macmillan Audio. All rights reserved.